This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Amid cries of fake news and clear evidence of disinformation campaigns, how do you know which sources to trust for information? Local journalists will be discussing how they earn trust among the public in a community conversation at Xavier University. The event is called Who Do You Trust? How Cincinnati Journalists Earn It and Keep It. It's scheduled for Monday, March 2nd from 7 to 8 p.m. at Xavier's Kennedy Auditorium. Journalist and educator Alyssa Yancey will be the moderator. And some of the participants in that event are here for a little preview conversation with me and with you, our listeners. So joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss trust in journalism are the Cincinnati Herald publisher Jan Michelle Lemon Kearney. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
We also have the Cincinnati Inquirer executive editor, Burl Love. Burl, thank you so much for coming back in.
Thanks for having me.
And back again, I guess you're my new co-host this week. It's your second appearance in 3 days, WCPO News Director Mike Cannon. Mike, thanks for coming back in as well.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, we want to hear from you out there listening about your thoughts on which media outlets you trust or why you trust certain media outlets, the feelings you have about media, local, nationally. Today, give us a call, 513-419-7100. You can email your thoughts to talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and get some of those into the show as well. Burl, I'd like to start with you on this one. You do lead the largest news organization in the region, and I'd like you to just share your thoughts on how the Inquirer promotes itself as an entity that is worthy of the trust of the region.
That's a very good question. I think because of the just nature of where people are politically, have had to be much more thoughtful about how we convey that message that you can trust us. We have to be super transparent, whether it's in letting people understand why we select stories and who is covering them, and kind of be very willing to peel back the curtain and explain the process of journalism. It's not generally understood as much as those of us in the industry wish it would be. Media literacy, that might have been Freudian, media illiteracy, but media literacy is something that I think we have to be very willing to do, in addition to this, the regular job of journalism, is just helping educate our audience, our community, about what journalism is, and be very involved in the discussion about, you know, what is fake news. It is actually a real thing, but it is not just a knee-jerk reaction to a story that you tend not to agree with. These are conversations I think that we as journalists have to have very openly every chance we have with our audience.
And I do want to dive a little deeper a little later on about fake news and what that means. And I appreciate the way that you clarified that, you know, it is a real thing, that is part of a disinformation campaign that goes on in our country and our electoral politics. But Burl, you talked about peeling back the curtain and letting the readers in a little bit to see how you're doing. How does the Inquirer do that?
One of the ways we do it is on social media. I think sometimes, you know, we have group pages that discuss politics. We have reporter Facebook pages. I have an editor's Facebook page where I will, from time to time, explain things. But we have to be very willing to jump into that sometimes hostile territory we call the comment zone, to meet people head on and explain and challenge things. You know, I'll give you a very real example. We recently did a story on disparity when it comes to arrests and traffic stops in our community based on, we're talking essentially racial disparities still. Even though arrests have gone down as a whole, the number of African Americans is still out of proportion to non-minorities. And so in the reporting process, one of the sources for this story, who is in the police department, and people who follow the story might not have to guess who it was, but I'll just leave the name out at the moment. Even before the story was published, went on a tirade about just the fact that we asked the question demonstrated our anti-police agenda, and therefore, this is fake news. So many times we will just let that happen, but I think what we have to do is when we're given the opportunity to explain what the process of journalism is, how we check facts, how we get responses, how we ultimately are seeking truth. And that's a messy process sometimes. It involves a lot of due diligence. It involves training. It involves a system of checks and balances. And there's no place for an agenda there. And I think that's where people who don't trust the media are assuming there's an agenda. And I think we have to be very willing to, not in a defensive way, but in an educational way, explain the process.
When Burrell's talking about that story, and the person who went on a tirade probably had like a super tirade after reading it, because actually the facts really did show that African Americans were stopped more, had more traffic stops and had more arrests. And so it turns out that actually that was true. And that's, you know, that whole driving while black is not a myth. It actually does exist.
And the other point that's interesting here, Mike, is that there is somebody out there who may disagree with the type of story that's coming out, whether it's factual or if there's an error there or not, just based on their own opinion. But they also have a platform. So like we're all, collegial colleagues, I suppose, but we're also competitors, right? On a lot of stories, we might be out trying to outdo each other out in the field on one of the stories. In a lot of ways, we're not just competing with other media outlets anymore. We're competing with anybody with a platform, and that's just about everyone. And Mike, how does that impact the way we distribute news?
I think that's a huge impact. I think that's an impact on the business side, and that's an impact on the sort of trust side, because anyone can go out there and share their viewpoints. Before, there were these huge barriers to entry, right? You had to have an antenna to broadcast a radio signal or a TV signal, or you had to have a printing press. Those things were super expensive. So you had to start with a level of capital, and usually that also led to a level of credibility. Now, anyone out there can share their opinion on whatever it is, and that opinion may or may not be credible, and it may or may not appear credible. And so you have all this stuff that sort of spreads out there. But to sort of piggyback on one of the things that we were talking about before, there's so many assumptions that are made. So one of the things – I've been involved in trust and efforts to build trust now for, I think, 5 years and to help our newsroom build trust with our audience. And we're involved in a project called the Trusting News Project with the Reynolds Journalism Institute. And there's a study from 2018 that 21% of U.S. adults have actually met a journalist. So if you think about that, that's a huge number of people who have never actually met a real live working journalist.
Right.
So just like anything else, when you don't meet someone, you don't get to know people, whether it's someone from a different ethnic group or a different background than you, you start to make up these narratives in your head. You develop stereotypes. You look at how journalists are portrayed in like pop culture media, like movies and TV shows, and look what they're doing. They're sleeping with sources to get information. They're doing other unscrupulous things. They're staging news stories in movies and TV shows. Well, if that's what you see and you never actually know a real journalist, you might jump to conclusions that, you know what, we are a bunch of like people who are only out for the story. All we care about are page views and ratings. All we care about is being number one, and we don't care what rules we break or what we do to get to the top. And that's just not the reality for almost any journalist I've ever met, and I've been doing this for a very long time.
Well, in a way, though, media outlets do have to care about ratings and page views, right? Because you're supported by advertising or support in some fashion. How are you able to balance that? And let me start with you, Jan Michelle. You operate a smaller publication by comparison.
Yeah, but you know, credibility is key, because you in the short term you might get more page views or more publicity, but if you don't have credibility, that's going to die, and people will not pay you any attention, and advertisers will be far away. So it's really important to be credible. And I think when readers look at a story, they have to look at the sources that are cited in the story. I mean, we take a lot of time, all news sources do, when you're reporting on news, to get different points of view and to get different sources. You're not just relying on on one person. And that's different than social media a lot, because people get on, you know, even the president, and they start tweeting about, you know, their opinion about something as if it's news, and it's just their opinion. So you have to look at all the different sources that you have, because news outlets, including the Cincinnati Herald, take a lot of time and effort to check their sources, check the facts, and make sure that we have lots of different sources, because everybody's biased. I mean, you can't say, you know, you're totally objective. Everybody's biased. And the way to fight that is to get a lot of different viewpoints.
And the bias isn't always malicious, right? I mean, it comes down to—
Sometimes you don't even know about it.
You have your morning news meeting, and just deciding what it is that your organization is going to cover for
right.
the day is part of bias, I suppose.
Right.
It's also part of reporting, right? Like every single day we are making news judgment decisions based on all the facts we know and some of the criteria that we use to make those decisions. We're constantly sort of juggling what to cover, what not to cover, what to include in the story, what not to include in the story. And that's one of the pieces, I think, of criticism that I'll get sometimes from people in our audience that'll say, I just want you to report all the facts all the time. And it's like, okay, well, I need about 7,000 more reporters on my team to do that, because it's just not possible. It never really was. And I think we all, as sort of mass media, at one point in time attempted to be all things to all people. And the reality was we couldn't do it 20 years ago. We can't do it with the staffing resources we have now, certainly. And so we're making those judgment calls. And yes, biases creep in. Every single one of us, we're not robots. If we were robots, I don't know what those news stories would be like, but we're real human people and we all have human biases. But the thing is, and I think this is one thing that people are not fully understanding, is we are professionally trained and we have checks and balances in every newsroom to make sure that those biases don't creep in. And we're constantly sort of having those discussions in our newsrooms of how do we make sure a story is balanced and fair. And that's the part that I think that people don't fully grasp, is what all goes into what happens behind the scenes to the points that we were discussing earlier of pulling back the curtain and letting people understand what policies are in place, what discussions we're having, and that sort of thing.
And, you know, I want to give a shout out to Channel 9 to what Mike is saying, because another thing you have to look at is how is the story presented. And so the National Association of Black Journalists pointed out that a lot of television stations, when they do a story, and also, you know, print media as well, when they do a story about an African-American, which has nothing to do with the person committing a crime, but they might pull up an old mugshot because it's easy to find those pictures. And so WCPO has instituted a policy where they do not use mugshots. And so, and I think that's wonderful. And that's, you know, that's just presenting something. So if you're doing a story about someone as a victim and you've got their mugshot, what does that say to the person looking at it?
Yes, and that is what we talked with Mike from WCPO about earlier on Monday. We've got that full conversation at WVXU.org right now inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation. Let's take some calls now. Michael is on the line. Hi, Michael. What's your question or comment?
So my question in regards to creating trust. You know, you talk about advertisers, and you mentioned it earlier. The pharmaceutical industry is probably the biggest advertiser in all of this. And how can you create fair, balanced journalism when you have advertisers spending that much money into something?
Michael, we do appreciate your call very much. Thank you for that perspective. We'll adjust that question slightly, Burl, and throw it over to you. I mean, it part of being unbiased as a commercial media outlet, I suppose, is that you're not really supposed to discriminate that much on who is advertising in your
yeah,
media outlet as well.
There's always been what we call the separation of church and state, where the advertising side of the business is walled off from the news side so that there's no influence there, so that there's no pay to play. But kind of going back to what you said earlier about, you know, we're all in the competition for audience, we're all in the competition for advertising dollars. One of the things, and does that make trust a challenge? One of the things that we are shifting in our business is, not to get too far in the weeds, but bulk raw page views that generate very little advertising dollars is not the future for us. The future is audience loyalty and having them come back and having them subscribers, so that we're less reliant on advertising dollars, which the way whether you're in broadcast or whether you're in print, the shift from traditional legacy advertising models to the digital environment we're in is pennies to the dollar. We're competing against everybody. And so you see advertising take a smaller piece of that pie. And what do we have to replace it with? Audience loyalty, and for us, in the form of subscriptions. So it really is less of a factor now than it might have been in the past, the reliance on just advertising to bring you the news.
And we're going to pick up this conversation more on that issue coming up in just a moment. We'll also be joined by WLWT Channel 5 reporter Alexis Rogers, who is going to be joining us on the phone. So this conversation continues in just a moment. And a little bit later on, we'll have a look at the local organization that's working to improve the lives of birds of prey. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our conversation about trust in local journalism with the Cincinnati Herald publisher Jan-Michelle Lemon-Kearney. And we also have with the Cincinnati Inquirer executive editor Burl Love and WCPO news director Mike Cannon. And joining us on the phone now is WLWT-TV reporter Alexis Rogers. Alexis, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to be with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for letting me join you guys.
Well, as a field reporter who's, I guess, out in the field now, we asked a question at the top of the show about how you build trust. And you're someone who, you know, maybe on a different type of story in a different corner of the greater Cincinnati region on any given day. And maybe you can share a little bit about your experience on how you introduce yourself to a coverage area that maybe you're unfamiliar with and unfamiliar to in terms of building trust.
Absolutely. You know, I'm originally from the Chicago area, and I learned very quickly that Cincinnati is a place that's all about authenticity. And if they don't see you around other than when you want something, you probably won't be very successful. So a lot of times when I meet people, especially since I'm meeting them at ungodly hours of the day because I work in the morning, so it's very common to have me on your doorstep at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning if something happened. You know, I always just come from a human place. I believe in people first journalism. And so a lot of times, you know, I'm very forthcoming about what it is that I'm there for. I try to do my best and I try to allow people to know what I actually have control over and what I don't, because a lot of people don't realize that journalism is a team sport, if you will, and we all have our roles. And so, you know, but we all love good storytelling as well. So I try to be as forthcoming and as accessible as possible story.
And Alexis will be joining Mike, Jan-Michelle, and Burl as part of the event, Who Do You Trust? How Cincinnati Journalists Earn It and Keep It. That is Monday, March 2nd from 7 to 8 at Xavier University's Kennedy Auditorium. We have details at WVXU.org. 513-419-7100 is the number to join our conversation. We have Ryan on the line. Hi, Ryan. What's your question or comment?
Hi there. Good afternoon. I wanted to just see if you guys could comment on my opinion on party politics, the end of civil discourse, and how that factors into the situation that we're now in this country, particularly in some of the mainstream media and some of the cable outlets. It seems to me that we as a people are so afraid to have differing points of opinion that we oftentimes block out, you know, people from the other side of the aisle in terms of, you know, political parties. I feel like at this point in time, anybody who's a moderate is kept in the dark. And if you, you know, even if you're a Republican, if you claim to be a Republican, then you have to view things with a certain lens. Otherwise, you are not considered a good Republican or a good Democrat or you know, liberal enough. And I think that is a dangerous situation we're in this country. And I fear for where we're going in that direction, particularly with you know, the social media outlets that we have. I was just wondering if you could comment on that.
Ryan, we sure can. We appreciate you listening, and thank you so much for your call and your question. Bro, we'll start with you on this one. I guess a way to frame that question is, look, there's a lot of good journalism that's taking place right now. Maybe the best era for journalism ever. There's just so many opportunities for good journalism to be done. But there is a lot of hyper-partisan journalism that does creep into more mainstream deliveries, whether it be cable news or highly popular websites. How does your outlet, the Cincinnati Inquirer, balance itself in the sea of partisan media?
So I think the caller... his question nailed the dilemma we all face. And that's what keeps me up at night, that we have started as a society to self-select our news. There's no serendipity anymore if you choose not to be exposed to other viewpoints. And that's, I think, partly a phenomena, if not almost entirely, of social media being the number one way many people receive their news. Even if they are receiving news from multiple outlets, legitimate news outlets, it's coming through the filter of social media. Therefore, algorithms are at play. You can easily put yourself into an echo chamber. And so what we call mainstream media in the non-pejorative sense that tries to be balanced in reporting does not fit in that ideology and is therefore dismissed. So, you know, I'll give you a great example in the in the 2016 election, the Cincinnati Enquirer endorsed Hillary Clinton and immediately lost half its readership. Now, I'm joking. It didn't. But it felt that way because people are so polarized politically. And so that has forced us, getting back to trust, to rethink the role of the traditional newspaper endorsement. You know, should we be telling people who to vote for, or should we be educating them on the strengths, weaknesses, views of the candidates and help them make their own decisions? So I don't think that answers the question, but what we have done to counter the political polarization is to make sure that we don't hold on to traditions that we might have done that get in the way of people trusting us. And the newspaper, the classic newspaper endorsement, is but one of many things that we have reevaluated so that we can demonstrate to people that that it's better to expose yourself to more viewpoints to be an informed citizen than to just surround yourself with the same thing over and over again that lines exactly what your beliefs are.
And I totally agree with that. I think that's wonderful because really we have to show a lot of different viewpoints. It's not our job as journalists to tell people how to think. And I think that's an insult to the public. They don't need us to tell them how to think. They do need us to present the facts and show them the stories.
And that's one of the tight balancing acts even that like traditional newspapers have to do because a lot of people...
It's also why people get angry all the time at us.
Is opinion part of journalism? I mean, there is an important part in journalism where somebody who you should be able to trust that their perspective is coming from an educated place, as long as it's labeled that this is an opinion and this represents this person's opinion. Is that a difficult place for you to navigate? Do you run op-eds or editorials?
We do. But one thing for the Black press, I mean, going back to the first Black newspaper in 1827, was that we're a forum for the many different viewpoints of the African-American community and really for the community at large. There is no one Black viewpoint. When people say, you know, what do Black people think? Well, they think all different kinds of things, you know, the entire spectrum. And so, and they have a forum in the Cincinnati Herald to express those viewpoints. And we make it really clear, these are the opinions of the writer. They're not our opinion. You know, we might agree, we might not. And so people get mad. They want to boycott. They're like, how could you publish that? Well, it's someone's opinion. And so it's food for thought, and you can agree or not.
Let's get Mike in.
One of the things that I don't know whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, but sometimes I feel like one of my missions on this earth is to go in and try to at least in the sphere of my own friend groups on social media, steer people down the direction of truth and understanding of what journalists do and what's real journalism and what's not. I feel like I'm like fact-checking memes way more than I ever thought I would in my entire life.
Yeah.
I generally find if someone puts together a meme with a quote, it's like 50-50 that that's really what the person said or that that's true in any way, whether it's on either side of the spectrum. But one of the things that I spent a long time one day responding to a friend of mine about, he was very much in the almost like fake news kind of like camp and explaining like all the different elements that you have to understand to truly be media literate and to understand whether a news source is real, whether you can trust them, whether you need to trust them but have like a grain of salt with that trust. And there's just so much. And when I started writing it all out, I was like, man, this is so complicated. This is hard for me. Now, imagine someone who doesn't work in the media or has never been exposed to these types of things, trying to understand like, okay, so, you know, in the world of what people call the mainstream media, that includes a lot of things that I would consider not to be journalism. They're talk shows. The people are a host who is designed to provoke thought and reaction less than to share information. It's all about opinion, not all about facts. And so that gets lumped in, all those shows get lumped in with what we all do every day, which is really about reporting and sharing truth versus sharing opinion. And I think that those things all kind of get lumped in together. And then you have the op-ed world and the opinion world. And we all, if we have opinion stuff, label that stuff very clearly. But there are a lot of places out there that doesn't happen.
Right.
There are other media organizations that you know coming into it, they have a certain angle that they're coming from, just like, say, a magazine might used to do. And sometimes you know what that is and sometimes you don't. If you're coming in via a social media pathway versus coming directly to that website, maybe you don't know. And then on top of that, there's all the craziness out there. There's all the things that look like they're a legitimate media site, but they aren't. They're fake.
It's tough to discern. And Alexis, before we let everyone go, I want to make sure I get another question over to you since you were kind enough to join us on the phone while you're at work today. Have you dealt with anything out in the field where, I don't know, somebody hurled some type of insult at you without even knowing what you were doing just because you appear to be a reporter?
Oh, all the time. And, you know, it's interesting because I get it from both spectrums because you have a regional difference. I came here from Little Rock, Arkansas, work-wise. And so I came at the peak of the election the last time around. And so I got a chance to see the difference between Little Rock and here. And a lot of it just takes kind of what Mike was talking about, patience and understanding, because I always tell people that I'm the best friend you didn't know that you needed or that you wanted. And it ends that way. It doesn't necessarily start that way. And it might not even be because of what I did or what I said. It might just be because I'm typically in that space, right? And so a lot of times, and we talk about this with Greater Cincinnati Association of Black Journalists all of the time, is making sure that we educate people on what's real and what's not. Listen, I could care less what you actually like and don't like. That's fine. You're, as Jan said, you are more than welcome to feel the way that you feel, but facts are facts. And so, especially in this day and age, I feel like this is like the season of the fact checker. And sometimes people don't like things that they don't want to be their reality. You know, I take the city and suburban approach all the time. You know, the conversations, the realities that we might show in a certain school system opposed to others, I will get emails all day that say, well, I mean, you're just saying that because of this or that, or going back to the election. I mean, I can't cover everybody. So therefore, if I'm covering one thing and I have a partner covering another thing, we're going to try to cover that thing as thoroughly as possible. But people almost want media and trained media to pick a side. And that's just it's very inappropriate to do. And so, you know, I report on people that I might not personally like all the time, but facts are facts. And I think that's where we have to try to help people who want to know, because some people just don't care. And I think that that's another thing that we have to be okay with, mm-hmm. is that some people just don't want to be educated. And that's bad. And, you know, we call them spade a spade. But there are others that if you stick around long enough, even on your deadline, and you have a conversation with them and you say, okay, so what's your question? What can I help you with? You know, a lot of times the conversation will go a little differently. That's at least what I found, especially as we get further and further into this political season, whether it be locally or nationally. I mean, people love to be heard. You know that for sure.
Okay, the event is called Who Do You Trust? How Cincinnati Journalists Earn It and Keep It. It's scheduled for Monday, March 2nd from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock in the evening at Xavier University's Kennedy Auditorium. Journalist and educator Alyssa Yancey will be the moderator. And I believe, Jan Michelle, you had one more thing you wanted to plug.
Oh, you're so wonderful. Thank you for letting me put in a plug for Alyssa's Ohio Values Project that's coming up. It's a collaboration between CPO, the Cincinnati Herald, Mansfield Source, somewhere in Ashland, Knox Pages, the Devil Strip in Akron. And I think the Enquirer is involved in this too, because
If not, I'm going to get us on
board. If not, you are. Okay, great.
I don't want to be left out.
So journalists are going around the state and they're interviewing community members on their values to see how their values impact their votes. So stay tuned for that. It's called Ohio Values, and it's produced by Alyssa Yancey.
And details on Monday's event at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. My thanks to WLWT reporter Alexis Rogers, who joined us on the phone, and my friends here in the studio, Cincinnati Herald publisher Jan Michelle Lemon-Kearney, Cincinnati Enquirer executive editor Burl Love, and WCPO news director Mike Cannon. Thanks to all of you for this great conversation.
Thanks,
we should
Mike.
Do it more
this was
often.
So much fun. This is great.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is... Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.